Listen, you don't want to miss today's show because not only do we have the SBF and Caroline sex tape, which we're going to play here on YouTube, we're also going to talk to you about the Curve Wars. We've got a guest who's calling for the biggest correction in history. He says we're in the middle of the biggest correction, the biggest market crash in history. We also got an FTX update. We've got a massive DCG update and Genesis update. Tomorrow, we've got an insider coming on the show. It's going to be huge. There's just so much to do today. What have I missed? Okay, well, you'll see what I've missed when we actually start the show. So let's do this.
Get the fuck out of bed, bitch. Go. Get up. Wake up, bitch, get up. Get up.
I'm not joking. We are actually going to play the sex tape. In fact, hold on a second. Fred. Who's Fred? Okay, Fred, play the sex tape. No, okay, man. Now we have the sex tape out of the way. We can start the show. You gotta have fun. Let me just switch off my emails here. All right, well, welcome, guys. Remember, if you're new to the channel, we're not always like this. Sometimes we have serious shows, sometimes we just laugh. We get the mickey, we have fun. We gotta have some fun in a market like this. Big show today. Some good news, of course. FTX update. We're gonna talk about the Curve attack because I don't know if you guys saw, but I mean, I don't know if you paid attention, but if you were paying attention today, and I was paying attention, let me just say this. I was paying attention. You would have seen that Curve got attacked by the hacker, the same guy that hacked Mango Markets. His name is Avram Eisenberg, I think his name is. And he shorted Curve from 54 cents all the way down to 40 cents. And then he got up here back to 64 cents. I'm going to show you how that happened. Because if you know how that happened, then you can see where he's doing it again. And he is doing it again on another token. So we'll talk about that token over there. We're going to talk about Digital Currency Group today. There's a lot going on at DCG, potentially a solution. And if a solution does happen, it's going to be a massive short squeeze. We're going to talk about Uniswap. We're going to talk about Chainlink. We're going to talk about Cardano. We're going to talk about Phantom. We're going to talk about Andre Crenier. I mean, this is going to be the highest alpha show that you've ever seen. And then I've got a mystery guest for you guys. The guy that's saying that we are in the middle of the biggest market collapse that we've seen in our lifetime. So it's going to be big. It's all going to be credible. It's going to be fun. What you need to do, you need to subscribe to the channel. If you are a subscriber, you need to like the content. And then just give us someone says, can we restart the trading competition? There is a trading competition. Join my team at the BitGet trading competition because it's like a soccer trading competition. We can win 100 Bitcoin. And yeah, I think it's going to be amazing. I'm going to do a trade after the show. I'm going to show you what the trade is as well. All righty. Should we start the show? What do you say? Fred, what do you say? Should we start the show, Freddy? I think Fred's gone home. How does Fred still work here? I mean, that's crazy. You see, people are saying no notification again on YouTube. You see, that's called being shadow banned. That's crazy. How many of you didn't get a notification? I'm so tired of YouTube shadow banning me. Jesus.
I didn't.
I'm so angry about this. I really am so angry about this. Anyway, let's get to the alpha of the show because that's why you guys actually came here. Start the show. Let's go. Let's go. So where are we? We're with Bitcoin. There was earlier, I said to you, there was going to be a slight short squeeze when we were at about 15,500. I don't know if you guys were following my Twitter. Let me just find that. There we go. So earlier on today, you got to follow my Twitter. That's where the alpha is. Earlier on today, about 3 hours ago, I said to you, look at the shorts versus long position on Bitcoin. The shorts were three times the long positions. And so I said to you guys, there's going to be a massive short squeeze today. I thought the short squeeze was going to be bigger, but not bad. I mean, if you look at the at where we were, let's we could just fix that. We were, when I tweeted that, it was around 15,500. We're back now at 16,100. So we did get a little bit of a short squeeze. Now, when I look at the data, now the longs are in control, but not enough for there to be an imbalance. So no trade at this stage. Right now, market is pretty neutral. No trade at this stage. Next chart, which you're watching today, Curve. I'm going to show you what happened here. I'm going to show you how you can make a lot of money. You see, no notifications. God. Okay. We got to, I mean, I can't wait for Twitter. The one chart that no one's watching is this chart over here. Now, I'm not a chartist, but I am better than most of the chartists that work here. Like I'm better than Carl and better than Sheldon, better than all those guys. Bombay trillionaire. So no one's watching this chart over here. No one's realizing that this is the total crypto market cap. What most people aren't seeing is that this total crypto market cap is actually on final support. Like this is like final support. Because if this breaks down, I mean, there's a little bit of a support level here, which is about, 30% down from there, 20% down. And then the next support level that means anything is about here, which is about 40% down. So this is a very, very, very critical level that we have to hold. We must all watch right now. The chart to watch is this chart, because that's the one that no one's watching. Everyone's too busy with the Bitcoin chart. No one's watching this chart over here. The other chart that you should be watching, I think, is a Solana chart, because I suspect that very soon there's going to be a huge short squeeze here on Solana. Too many people are short, and I think there's going to be a short squeeze at some point. Someone said, Carl mentioned, did you mention total market cap this morning?
1, 2, and 3.
Carl, you just got a promotion, bro.
To what?
To, I don't know, what's your role now?
I'll take double the pay.
No, but wait, what is your role now? What is your role now? Well, like, what do you call yourself?
Executive presenter.
Okay, congratulations, Carl. You are now a senior executive presenter. It's true. You're a senior executive presenter. The one thing also that we should be looking at, because it does feel like we're in this capitulation area. Like it just feels like everything's breaking. It feels like it's the end of crypto. You got DCG falling. You got FTX falling. You got the lenders collapsing. Rumors of DCG not being able to raise money. We're going to talk about that in a second. All of those things are happening. And now what do we need? What are we seeing? We're seeing a minor capitulation. So the miners are actually selling their Bitcoin. Usually the miners don't sell their Bitcoin, but the miners are starting to sell their Bitcoin. The reason why they're starting to sell the Bitcoin is because to mine Bitcoin has become much more difficult. And with the Bitcoin price down, they're not making as much money. And so they're starting to sell. So that's another little capitulation thing. But remember I said this to you before, as bad as it feels now, and it does feel bad, if you zoom out, what you realize is that this is just a deleveraging. All of these collapses are about leverage. Luna was about leverage. 3 Arrows Capital was about leverage. Celsius was about leverage. FTX was about leverage. This is just all the players in the industry who were using leverage capitulating and falling apart. The one thing that you got to remember is that when 2017 collapsed, when 2017, 2018 happened, the collapse was because people stopped believing in a technology. People said, look, this technology ain't going to work. No one's using Bitcoin. No one's using Ethereum. No one was using Solana. No one was using any of this technology. There was no GMX. There was nothing. This time, this is just a collapse of leverage and centralized leverage players primarily. And so what you're seeing now is people that have been here for a long time, like Ryan Stalker says, we're approaching peak FUD. I'm not saying that everything is sunshine and rainbows, but this tech is not going to be uninvented. The need for crypto that is safe and usable is more apparent than ever. The amount of talent and capital working on big ideas is at all-time highs. That's pretty much all you need to read to forget about the noise, because everything else here is just noise. Everything else here is just noise. This noise on Solana that's happening on Solana, the fact that there's an overhang of tokens, great. I hear you. There is an overhang of tokens. Can't argue with you. There are a lot of tokens in the market. SBF has a lot of tokens. But take away the noise. Just for like 1 second, take away the noise. and look at the fundamentals. And I quickly want to find your chart if I've got it. I've got so many charts going here. Okay, hold on a second. Here we go. So you got the mainnet of Solana doing 7,200 transactions per second, and you got NFTs exploding on Solana. So don't mistake the price of the token for the efficacy of the chain itself. That's what you got to remember. Right now, the best advice that I can give you is to stop looking at the prices. When I wake up in the morning, I don't actually look at my trading view or my portfolio at all. Why? Because the prices are overreacting to the deleveraging. And if you look at that, you may do stupid things. You may sell. You may believe that the chains aren't working. But if you look at the fundamentals, what you realize is that the chains are actually working. I'll show you another example, right? You look at Phantom's price. Let's quickly look at Phantom's price. Here's Phantom. You see, people aren't here because the notifications aren't working. Very upsetting. Very, very, very upsetting. So let's look at Phantom's price. Excuse me for one second. Phantom's price, 17.3 cents, 17.4 cents. Let's look at the fundamentals behind Phantom. Does that look like the chain's going away? Does that look like the, I mean, this is the growth in addresses. Look at the daily growth in addresses since October. Okay, now that correlates with another little thing that is going on. And that is that I saw this here. So we were invited to speak at a conference. And in that conference, Andre is a speaker. And Andre is speaking. His title is Phantom Foundation. Weird. And I also know that he's no longer working where he got a job when he left crypto. He got a job. And I know that he's no longer at that job. Sources have told me he's no longer at that job. Sources have told me that right now he's not doing much. Or is he? Is he maybe looking at crypto? So you see, that's what I'm saying to you. You got to be very, very, very careful of falling into the sentiment, because the decisions that you make now, the moves that you make now, when everybody is panicking, when the leverage is falling apart, those decisions will determine what happens to you when the bull market comes back. Now, a lot of you guys are saying you've been bullish since 40,000. You've been telling us to buy the dip from 40,000. Yeah, truth is, no one knew about the amount of leverage in the system. Not even the biggest companies in the world, not Chainalysis, not the smartest investors in the world. No one knew that FTX was going to go under, or that Celsius was going to go under, or that Voyager was going to go under, and that would have this cascade. No one knew that was going to happen. Does that change my opinion of how the technology is going to disrupt the world? Not at all. Zero. Zero, zero, zero. In fact, great. Now is the time when heroes are born, as someone said in the chat. So what I'm saying is, forget about the noise, block out the noise. Or in fact, when you hear the noise and you see token prices coming down, ask yourself, are these token prices coming down because the underlying technology is not going to work? Or are the token prices coming down because of leverage, noise, attacks, et cetera, et cetera? And if the answer is the latter, leverage, noise, and attacks, well, that's a great opportunity for you. That's an amazing, amazing opportunity. I'll show you an example, right? Today, this morning, I woke up and I was watching Curve because I'm an investor in Curve. I have a lot of Curve tokens, okay? And I saw that Curve was coming down from 54 cents all the way down to 40 cents. So I did my homework. And I said, why is Curve actually coming down? The fundamentals are solid. Curve is an amazing exchange. From a technological point of view, it's one of the best exchanges. So I dig even further. What do I find? I find that the same guy that attacked Mango Markets, remember the Mango Markets hacker, the guy that hacked Mango Markets, but he didn't actually hack it. He just found a way to manipulate the prices in such a way that he could drain this thing very legally. And he said, look, I believe all of our actions were legal. Open market actions using the protocol as designed, even if a development team did not fully anticipate the consequences of setting up the parameters the way they are. And then remember that he passed a proposal to say, look, you'll return half the funds if they don't prosecute him, or something along those lines. And that's what happened. I found out today that he was attacking Curve. But this guy is an absolute genius. What he was doing is he was borrowing Curve. Listen to this. He borrows Curve from Aave and he leaves them collateral. And then he starts shorting Curve on size. Like crazy. He shorts and he shorts and he shorts and he shorts and he shorts. And as he's shorting Curve, the price of Curve comes down and down and down. And there was speculation that he was trying to get the price of Curve to 28 cents or 29 cents. And the reason why is because one of the founders of Curve, this guy, Michael Egorov, has a $48 million of Curve supplied on Aave with a liquidation price of 25.9. So there was speculation that what he was trying to do is he was trying to get to the point, he was trying to short so much to get the price to 25.9. And then what was going to happen is the leverage was going to be then he would have unwound his short. And so everyone starts to short Curve. Curve goes down, 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 down. At about 43 cents, I realize what's going on. And I think, hold on, this has got to be the buy of the century. And then what happens? People start short covering and more short covering and more short covering. And eventually what happens is the price goes back up to 64.2 cents. I mean, if you want a breakdown of what actually happened, I'll quickly read it to you. So hold on, there's a better breakdown. I think it's this breakdown over here. Let me just find your cool breakdown. Okay, so what happened? Whales go giga short Curve on sexes, on centralized exchanges. Whales borrow Curve on Aave, sell the coins on the sexes. So they go to Aave, they put down dollar collateral, they take Curve, they short Curve. They take the Curve, they short it on centralized exchanges. As the Curve price goes down, whales borrowed more Curve to sell on Aave, and they keep selling and selling and selling and selling. Once the price is pushed down to go as far as possible, the whales turn long. And the short covering starts because now all these people that have shorted have got to close. And what they did was they actually left their position on Aave open, completely open, so that the algorithm would auto-liquidate the shorts. And they said, look, we'll just destroy our position on Aave. We don't need the position on Aave. We've made so much money anyway. And so if you're paying attention today, if you had your eyes focused and you were paying attention today, this is what the returns were. This is what the returns were. Forget about the short because I think the short would have been too risky. But top to bottom, you could have made 60% in one day in the midst of a bear market. It's all about paying attention. You've got to pay attention. You've got to pay attention. Anyway, let's carry on. Let's talk about other stuff. I see Alessio's in the chat, so I'm going to bring him on in a second. But before I bring him on, let's quickly just do our FTX daily obligatory update. So it's every day for now, we have to obligatory talk about SBF. We have to, because otherwise, I mean, who are you if you're not actually reporting SBF? So let's quickly look at the latest on SBF. The first thing is they're talking about him actually coming to the Senate to testify in December. Now, December is like a week away, 2 weeks away. Question is, what happens? Does he actually go there? I mean, does he actually go? If I were SBF, I wouldn't go anywhere near the United States, because you know that, like, if you go to the United States, you got to be arrested. Same time, they've appointed a judge in the bankruptcy hearing, and today the hearings actually start and you're getting executives from FTX going to testify. But I think that the executives that are going to testify are not the executives that used to run the company, but the executives that are now running the company with the liquidator. So I think it's going to be, I think that's what's going to happen. At the same time, we have news today that Sam Bankman-Fried's parents bought 19 properties with over $121 million over the past 2 years, most of them in the Bahamas. So we know 1 billion of clients' funds are missing at FTX. 70 million was traced to political campaign donations that we know about. 300 million was cashed out by Sam himself. We know about that. And now 121 million was traced to his parents' properties. Crazy, 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 crazy. At the same time, you've got Senator Karen. Remember that Fidelity put Bitcoin on employees' 401ks, which is like their retirement funds. For those of you who don't live what's her name? So it says, dear Miss Johnson, in light of this is from a letter from Senator Karen, Elizabeth Warren, to Fidelity, the CEO of Fidelity. She says, dear Miss Johnson, in light of the recent standing events in digital markets, we write to you today as a follow-up to our previous letter sent on July 26, where they urged Fidelity not to add 401ks. Not to add Bitcoin onto 401ks. As one of the largest providers in the world, Fidelity Investments is a global leader in financial services. More than 32 million Americans and 22,000 employees trust Fidelity Investments with their workplace retirement accounts and employee sponsor plans. Yet in recent years, Fidelity Investments has opted to expand beyond traditional finance and delve into the highly unstable and increasingly risky digital asset markets. And so she keeps writing this moan letter, which I don't think anybody's actually going to pay any attention to. So anyway, that is today's obligatory FTX update. Have we done that? We've obliged. All good. Okay, good. Great. Can I bring in Alessio? Can we talk about the biggest crash in market history? Okay, then let's talk about it. Alessio, how are you, my friend?
Yeah, thanks very much. I really appreciate it. Thanks for your invitation. Good to be here. Thanks a lot.
Listen, we've been trying to get you on the show for a long time. You know that. We've been trying to get you on the show for a long time. I'm an avid follower of your channel, by the way. Is Alessio's channel in the description? Okay, so if you want to follow Alessio, go in the description, smash, follow his channel. Great channel. It's one of the only chartists that I go to for information.
Oh, that's very kind.
Alessio.
That's very kind of you to say. I appreciate that. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Absolute pleasure, my friend. Let's talk about where you see the markets and where you see the crypto markets today. And feel free to share your screen. There's a little share screen button at the bottom. I don't know if you can see it.
Share screen? Yeah, I will do that, certainly. Okay, so let me just talk about it, and then we'll go on to the chart. So your question was in regards to stock markets, was it?
Well, stock markets and crypto. So, like, you know, we've had, if I zoom out now and I look at where we are in the markets, you know, I look at Bitcoin. Bitcoin is 85% down from its all-time heights, just above 16,000. You have the NASDAQ, which has had a big correction back at 11,500 on the December futures.
Yeah.
Kind of wondering where you see us going from here.
Okay, so I'll come to Bitcoin later. First, I want to discuss the stock market. And as I'm sure you know, as I'm sure anybody who watches this, because of the correlation we often see between stock markets and Bitcoin, I like to focus firstly on the stock market, because should the stock market do something good or bad, and we'll see positive or negative, it could have an impact on Bitcoin. Although recently there seems to be a shift in the correlation. Bitcoin seems to be underperforming the S&P, obviously because of the matter you just raised a few minutes ago yourself with regards to FTX and everything else. There's a lot of uncertainty and fear right now in the crypto world. Which, by the way, can be if you're a contrarian, that can be a different point of view. But anyway, let me go on to the stock market first of all. I actually published a video today on my channel, which is worth talking about today with you and with your viewers. And maybe if I can just put it on here. Yeah, sure. So share screen.
I always feel uncomfortable when chartists don't show charts, because it's like.
By the way, is it the first time I'm using this? Is it called present?
Yeah, present. There we go. Just present. the present button.
Share screen. Okay, here we go.
There we go.
And then I'm going to go to... Can everyone see this?
Just click it and then just actually share it.
Click it and share. Right, okay. Bear with me.
No problem. Take your time.
Window. Ah, here we go. This is the one. Share. Okay. Let me know if everyone can see this.
Okay, so I'm going to share it for you. There we go. So this is the chart.
Yeah. Can you see where it says overlapping, no overlaps on the right-hand side?
Yeah, we can see it. Everything's good. We can see we see that.
I'm going to start with this because it has a bearing on what I want to talk about today. Just want to get some basics out of the way first. For a lot of people who don't know what I'm referring to here on this chart, this is essentially basic Elliott wave theory. For a lot of people who don't know what Elliott wave theory is, I don't want to go into that because it's going to take us for a long time. But essentially, Elliott wave theory tells us the markets, in fact, probably better if I show you this. Yes, here we go. Elliott wave theory tells us that the markets...
We still see the same chart. We still see the same screen.
What about now?
Still. I think you need to just maybe unshare. Let me try and unshare it and then try to share the one.
Really?
I think so. I don't know what the other side of this looks like, but let's see.
Okay. So you can still see the one on the left-hand side that says no overlaps.
Yeah, we can see overlapping and no overlapping.
All right, let's just stick with this because otherwise might get some technical issues here. Okay, I'm going to keep it simple. Basically, if you look at the right-hand side, a five-wave structure, a five-wave technical pattern is what's called an impulsive pattern. And Elliott wave theory tells us when you see a pattern like that, five-wave pattern, that tells you that the market is now deliberately moving in a direction. And the odds of a trend increase. Again, it's all about probabilities. We're not talking about certainties here. That the odds and the probabilities of a trend in a specific direction increase when you see a five-wave move. Very important also, the five waves must not overlap one another. When I say overlap, I mean, if you look at the waves 4 and 2, if you look at those downward moving waves, notice they don't overlap. They don't move in the same territory as one another. They are separate and distinct in their space and time, okay? Now, if we go in the left-hand side, we see two different structures, but they're basically both called corrective structures. Corrective structures essentially have two characteristics. One is they usually overlap. Look at the first one in red. Lots of, you see, by the way, this is exactly what Bitcoin looked like. If you see the rally in Bitcoin in August, from the June crash to the August, September highs, I think it was August highs, you'll see a very much a rally that looks like that. Very corrective, very overlapping. And at the time I was in my videos, I was saying this is a warning and not everything is right with this rally. If you see lots of overlapping waves. When I say overlap, so
I don't know if you can see that. So you're talking about the rally that we had in June, yeah. July, August? Exactly. So it looks exactly like your chart. So you got that. Yes. And that is equal to your red line over here.
Absolutely. You're absolutely correct. And that's the red one. The red structure is overlapping. The reason I mentioned is the red one, because some people look at that and say, oh, it's an uptrend. You got higher highs, higher lows, probably five waves. But the fact is, that's a mistake. If you see something that looks like an uptrend, but the waves are really overlapping one another, they're all going in the same territory as one another, it probably is not a good sign. It's not a sign of strength. It's a sign of weakness in the corrective structure, which means what? Which means it's more likely to fail. If you look at the orange structure, the one underneath, the three-wave structure, that's also corrective. That's also a sign of weakness. And by the way, if you look at the chart of Bitcoin on a higher time frame, on a weekly chart, if you look at the structure in the summer of this year and the spring of this year on Bitcoin on a higher time frame, you will see a three-wave move. Again, I'm sorry, exactly. I don't have the chart with me right now.
But... yeah, exactly. So let me actually get that chart. It's exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, you can show it after the session.
One, two, three.
Yeah.
You have a three-wave move over here, which started around about June or May, June, and it went
absolutely
like that and ended on the 15th of November at the all-time high.
Yeah. One thing I want to say about this chart, this particular slide, before I move to the next one is, for people who are watching, the C wave of a three-wave move, if you look at an ABC structure, the one in orange, the C wave is usually 100% in degree to the A wave. In other words, the C wave usually is symmetrical in its movement to the A wave. And if it's not symmetrical, it's usually about 138.2. People who are not familiar perhaps with Fibonacci, 138.2 is a Fibonacci number. 38.2, 138.2 is a Fibonacci ratios. Okay. So that's the other thing I want to mention here. The next thing, this is really important. Now, maybe you cannot see this, but can you tell me if you see the pivots, this S&P 500 chart?
Are you on PowerPoint or where do you want to
go? I'm on PowerPoint, yeah.
So just shift to the next slide. Just click on your next slide, which is slide 2.
Okay, click on my next slide. Okay, let me see if I can do that.
There we go. Now we can see it.
Okay, brilliant.
Yeah. Okay.
So I can see in this yellow chart. This is, I'll put out a video on this, but I want to explain it here. So why am I even mentioning this? Because a lot of people are expecting a Fed pivot sometime soon, sometime maybe by the end of this year or next year. What's a Fed pivot? Well, as I'm sure anyone who's been paying attention to the news or watching your channel as well, they know that the Federal Reserve has been hiking rates. They've been raising interest rates to beat inflation. And their plan is they're not going to reverse direction until they see signs of inflation coming down. Now, at some point in the next several months, maybe sooner, I don't know, but it could be 2023. At some point, the Federal Reserve plans to reverse this. So the Federal Reserve, they plan to change their strategy of raising interest rates.
Yeah,
so, of course, yeah.
So, I mean, we've seen inflation starting to come down. We've had three months of down inflation. we also kind of, if inflation carries on like it's going on and there's no other bombshells, we kind of know that by March, April next year, inflation is going to be a thing of the past. And the reason why that is because the baseline is the high baseline from last year. Spend has been going down. And so we think that inflation will start going down and the Fed at some point will have to pivot. We think that the Fed will increase by only 50 basis points as opposed to 75 basis points in December when they meet. That's kind of where we, what we're thinking.
Yes, probably. You could be right. But at some point next year, I think it's fair to say it's quite likely the Federal Reserve will either cap rates, they'll just keep it constant. They won't raise interest rates, keep it constant. Or actually, they may start to decrease rates. They may cut rates. And essentially, that's what we call the Fed pivot. For people who may not be familiar with this term, the Fed pivot. So what does this mean? If you look back at history, look at this chart. This shows what usually happens after a Fed pivot. Most people, by the way, are not familiar with this. They've just heard dogma and mostly a bunch of stuff they've heard from other analysts, economists, but they haven't seen the data for themselves. And I want to share with you this data because it's really important. By the way, this this is courtesy of Elliott Wave International, this chart. So the meaning behind this chart is this. Two things to bear in mind. Before the Federal Reserve pivots and they start cutting rates, there is usually a market rally, okay? There's usually a boost, a rise in stock market prices. If you look back, for example, at the examples in 2007, in the year 2000, before the Federal Reserve pivoted and it started cutting rates, the market actually rallied just before that event. It went up in expectation of the Fed pivot. That's the first thing. The same happened in 1973. In 1973, 1981, 1969, the markets rallied. By the way, when I say rally, I don't necessarily mean a rally to all-time highs. It could be a bear market rally. Okay.
So can I just, if I think about it logically, the reason why this probably happens is because usually the Fed is comfortable to increase interest rates when the economy is good, right? Is that the thinking behind it? So the Fed says, hold on, economy is good, jobs are good, we feel comfortable to raise interest rates during rallies. Am I right in the thinking?
Partly, yes. That's a good point. But there's another reason behind it too, which is that if market participants, if traders believe, here's the basic thing. Stock markets usually like lower interest rate prices. They like lower interest rates, not rising interest rates. In other words, it's more favorable. It's a much better environment for stock markets when rates are going down instead of going up. Okay.
Yes.
So if investors and traders believe that the Federal Reserve is planning at some point to lower interest rates, cut interest rates, then markets will probably rise before that even happens. Because as I'm sure you know, markets are forward looking. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because as I'm sure everybody's listening to this knows that traders and investors place their bets many months in advance of something happening. I'm sure everyone's heard this phrase, buy on the rumor, sell on the news. That's what usually happens. That means if the Federal Reserve is giving signals or some kind of indication it might pivot next year and cut interest rates, the market will probably go up in expectation of that, rally in expectation. That's exactly what's happened every single time in the past. 2019, 2000.
My YouTube's gone crazy. Sorry. Yes. Carry on.
Yeah, that's what happened in the past, the year 2000, 2007, 1973, 1981, 1969. The market usually rallied just before that Fed pivot. And I want to just stress this. It doesn't have to be a rally to all-time highs. It could also be a bear market rally, like the one we're in right now. We're in a bear market, okay? So it could just be a bear market rally of about, I don't know how much it could go, but we could be setting up for a retracement of the previous decline. The markets went down this year, 25% from their highs, the highs made in January, or 25%. In other words, peak to trough, we're down 25% on the S&P. So we might retrace some of that decline and drop, if that makes any sense. Okay?
Yeah.
So that's what I'm talking about. Now, the second thing from this chart is this is the most crucial part of this chart, which is after the Fed pivot occurs, the biggest drop of the bear market then begins. So this is what everybody else doesn't seem to understand or realize. Most economists and analysts, they think when the Fed pivot occurs, when next year, 2023, the Federal Reserve says, guess what, guys? We're going to now cap rates. We're going to start cutting rates. Most analysts and economists, they think that, oh, okay, when that happens, when the Fed pivots next year, that'll be good news for the markets. And then we're going to go up significantly higher to all-time highs. That's wrong. In my view, that's mistaken. I think it's backwards. The market will probably rally in expectation of the pivot. And when the pivot occurs, when the Federal Reserve pivots next year in 2023, then the market will reach another top. It could be a top of all-time highs, or it could be a bear market rally top. In other words, the market, the stock market could make a bear market rally, make another top, a secondary top, and then drop again. Okay.
Wow.
And by the way, okay, the next drop, if you look at this chart, look at the year 2000, look at the year 2007, 1981, 1973. 1973, by the way, I'd say is the closest to what we're in right now. 73, 1969, 2019, 2020. After the Federal Reserve pivots, what happens? The biggest portion of the bear market drop occurs right after that, soon after it. It could be several weeks. It could be a few weeks or a few months. But then the biggest decline of the bear market begins after the Fed pivot. And that's when I want to be very cautious. While everybody else is, by the way, when the Fed pivot occurs next year, just think about the psychology. The psychology is backwards too. When the Federal Reserve pivots next year, it's possible the market may have rallied. As I said, we could be significantly higher than where we're at right now. Okay. As we're making this video, the stock market is about 3,900, I think.
Yeah, so, the S&P is, yeah.
Yeah, 3,900. Now, as long as the S&P stays above 3,700, which is my key support, let's say the market rallies back to over 4,000. Okay. Let's say we go up over 4,000. Let's say we even go back to 4,200 or even 4,311, which is a 61.8% retracement. Now, let's say the market retraces and goes up next year, in other words, in the next several months, until the Federal Reserve pivots next year. By that time, everyone will think, oh, we're now in a bull market. Everything's okay now. The Federal Reserve has pivoted. They're not cutting rates. The market is back up several hundred points. Everything's okay now. But actually, this chart shows that is the time when you want to be extremely cautious, extremely be aware, because that could be the turning point for the next major downturn in the market. Now, of course, I could be wrong about this. Again, we're basing this on probabilities, but I think based on what I'm seeing here and on historical statistics and evidence, I think this is the most likely scenario. Sorry, go ahead.
So we don't have a lot of time, but what you're saying is that we're probably going to have a little bit of a rally. When we get a little bit of a rally, at some point the Fed pivots, we're going to get into a massive correction. You're talking about a 50%, could be up to 50% correction if we were to mimic the 1970s.
Absolutely, yeah.
How would you trade?
That depends on each trader. I don't want to at this point go into that, because that could take several hours to explain. But my point is that in terms of pure charts analysis and in terms of our expectations, this is what I want to point out. And I know you're limited for time, so let me just say a couple more things. Some people object to what I've just said, and they say, well, first of all, we're in a bear market. The market's already down 25%. So how can the market go up and rally? As I said, as I explained just a few minutes ago, even in a bear market, you can have massive rallies. If you look back in August, the stock market went up 20%. Despite the market in August of this year went up 20% from July to August, despite the Federal Reserve raising rates and despite the fact that we're in a bear market. So just remember that that's very important to bear in mind. Now, all I want to say one more thing is this, which is Bitcoin, because I know you want to talk about Bitcoin. Here's something I want to mention. Yeah. We could finish with this. If you look back at what I've done here is a compile for you data. By the way, can you see this
yes,
chart?
Yeah. We can see the Fed pivot rate. Is that the one that you want?
No, I'm sorry. No, this is the next one I want to talk about. Yeah, the Bitcoin seasonality. What about this now?
Yeah, we can see it. This? Yeah, we amazing.
So you can see Bitcoin seasonality on this chart?
Yes. We can see.
But here's the last thing I want to say. I compiled this data going back to 2011, as far back as the charts can go on Bitcoin. And I saw, and I basically put together the performance, the actual performance of Bitcoin from October 31st to the new year, 31st December. That's the middle column. You can see the middle column says October 31st to 31st December. Okay. For each year, I put the performance in those are percentages, by the way. Those numbers are percentages.
Okay.
The green boxes are positive. The red boxes are negative. Okay. So the green or the black numbers are positive performance. The minus negative ones obviously are negative, as we can see. And by the way, the last column on the right is the performance of Bitcoin from December 31st to the 1st of spring, the first day of spring, which is 20th of March. Okay, that's the last column. Now, I wonder if anyone can see a pattern on this, but the pattern is very obvious. Notice when Bitcoin does well between October 31st to the new year, the first column, the middle column there.
It does well in Q1 as well.
Well done. Absolutely. It does well in Q1 of the next year between January 1st to the 1st of spring. But when it does badly in the October to December period to the end of the new year, guess what? It does badly also from 1st of January to the 1st of spring. You can see this pattern has been going on now for the last 11 years. Now, maybe the pattern will change this time around. I don't know. But I personally think if we're basing our decisions based on statistics and, again, historical evidence, if this pattern continues, if this trending pattern continues, it means this. If the stock market, if Bitcoin continues to remain below its October 31st closing price, which is 20,490 to be more precise, as long as Bitcoin stays below 20,500 by the end of this year, that means we may have a negative year this year. Yep. In other words, as long as Bitcoin continues to remain below its October 31st close, which again was about 20,490 approximately, then it means we'll have probably a negative finish to this year. And if we finish this year negatively, then it means next year from January to spring, we may also have a negative red period as well. But the opposite applies too. If we have a positive year this year between now and the end of the year, we may also see positivity between January and spring as well.
Carl, you and Alessio should be friends, bro, because you both seeing the markets down. We have an in-house chartist. He's also calling exactly. He's calling the same as you, the markets down.
Oh, really?
Listen, guys, Alessio, we are out of time, but sure. There is a link to Alessio's channel below. Alessio is amazing. He's amazing. We couldn't dig into all his wisdom now, but go and do it in your own time because this is one of the big guys that I actually follow. So, Alessio, thanks for coming on, my friend.
That's very kind. Thank you very much. Cheers.
All right. Guys, you need to go and see Alessio's channel because if you do, you'll realize that he's one of the best chartists out there. Carl wants to be like Alessio when Carl grows up, when he's older. All right, let's go. Let's go to the next big story because, I mean, that's why you actually all tuned in. You tuned in because you wanted to know what's happening with DCG. Now, the good news is that tomorrow I have an insider coming on, someone inside the system. Coming on. Don't miss tomorrow's show. It's going to be huge. I'm going to tell you exactly what's going to happen. Let's quickly look at where we are when it comes to DCG. So remember we said that Genesis. What did you buy us to drink, Carl? We said Genesis Capital yesterday was looking to raise $1 billion. And remember the reason why they needed to raise $1 billion because Genesis had a pretty bad year. I mean, they first got caught with Terra Luna. Then they got caught with Three Arrows Capital where they had a $2.4 billion worth of exposure. Now, what happened to that exposure, I've managed to actually track the tweet for you guys. So to make it a little bit more factual, this is Michael Morrow. Michael Morrow was the CEO of Genesis Trading. He said, look, we previously stated in June that we mitigated our losses with respect to the large counterparty who failed to meet the margin call. Now that BVI bankruptcy process has commenced, we can confirm the counterparty was actually Three Arrows Capital. Now, the loans to this counterparty had a weighted average margin requirement of over 80%. Once they were unable to meet the margin call, we immediately sold collateral and hedged our downside, but they lost $1 billion in the process. Since then, we worked with DCG to find the optimal strategy to isolate the risk. And the way we isolated the risk was DCG has assumed certain liabilities, which is the claim against Three Arrows Capital related to this counterparty to ensure we have capital to operate the business. So you got Genesis Trading, which is this big OTC house, etc. They go and lose $1 billion or so, just over $1 billion on Three Arrows Capital. What do we do after? What do they do after? They hand over the claim against Three Arrows Capital to DCG. Now Genesis take another knock, which is the FTX knock, and they've halted withdrawals. And remember, I said to you yesterday that what they're doing now is they're going out and they're trying to raise as much capital as they can. They went out to try and raise $1 billion. That didn't work. So they've now cut the raise to $500 million. Hopefully they can make it work with $500 million. The problem is that what we're hearing is that right now there's not much interest for Genesis. And the reports yesterday said that if they don't raise the $500 million pretty quickly, that they could go into liquidation. And the word that the reports used was imminent. They then came out today and they said, look, or yesterday, and they said, look, so here is the original report. It says Genesis says they have no plans to file for bankruptcy imminently because they said it's not, we're not imminently filing bankruptcy. So now what's happening? You got Barry Silbert going out there trying to raise capital. So far unsuccessful. Remember that he does have a couple of options. The first option is to raise capital in Genesis. The second option is to raise money in DCG, the holding company of Genesis. And the third option is they own Grayscale. And Grayscale is the company that owns the GBTC Trust. And we told you guys yesterday that the GBTC Trust was trading at a huge value to net asset value and that they owned 28 million shares, which is about the equivalent. Right now, it's about $8 a share. So it's about the equivalent of $200 million, $250 million worth of GBTC. But what you can see as of yesterday is that they have now doubled, 2.5 times their number of trusts. So DCG own about $600 or $500 million worth of GBTC, which makes this whole thing very juicy because option number one, what they can do is they can try and redeem the trust. They have to change it using what they call a Reg M in the United States. And they can change it to start redeeming the trust. If they do that, there'll be a whole lot of Bitcoin which are sold onto the market. So option one, raise capital into DCG. Option two, raise capital into Genesis. Option three, sell off some of the assets of DCG. And remember, I showed you yesterday a whole lot of assets that they could sell. Option four, which becomes super interesting, which is what I think is actually going to land up happening in a very crazy way. And there's a blessing to this. And option four for me is that they can't raise the money. The one asset that they really have that can raise money is Grayscale. Because Grayscale, remember, Grayscale makes a 2% management fee on the crypto that it manages. And it manages about, I don't know, a couple of hundred million, maybe even billions. What do they manage? They manage, it's billions. They make about $300 million a year in management fees on the 2%. So $6 billion. They make about 2%. So that's a business that makes about $300 million a year. They could sell just the Grayscale business because that business makes a lot of money. They'll probably get a low multiple because very soon an ETF is going to be approved someday. And when that ETF is approved, then the value of the Grayscale business is going to become slightly smaller. But you could say that they could easily get 500 million, maybe even a billion for the Grayscale business alone if they were to sell it. And remember, that's just one of many businesses that they own. Let me show you some of the other businesses that they own. DCG. Let me just quickly go to the portfolio page to show you. Remember, they own a lot of things. They own shares in all of these companies. And we're only talking about Genesis, which is the company that got them into trouble. Yeah. And Grayscale, which ironically is just under them in the investments. Quite weird. All right. So, but they still hold all of these cash, all these things. So they could sell some of these things. If they don't, I agree with Will Clemente that what they could do is actually sell it to a traditional finance firm. Now that for me is the best case scenario. Okay. Bitcoin is pumping. That's the short squeeze, people. That is a short squeeze. Where is the Bitcoin pump? This is not a pump. Are you guys watching the 3-minute chart again? This is the short squeeze I was talking about earlier on my Twitter. You should have listened. Bitcoin will be pump. Hold on a second. Are you trading the 5-minute chart, James?
No.
Supposed to be driving the show. Anyway, so this is the irony. Everyone says I shine. James, we've got to fix the light. Yeah, Mom, that's tiny. Okay, so if DCG is unable to raise capital and sells Grayscale to a TradFi firm like Fidelity, it would be a positive for crypto. Why? Because A TradFi company is probably the only company that can now bail us out. B, what happens then is there's probably a bigger chance that we get this approved. Like, for example, if Fidelity go to the SEC and say, listen, we're Fidelity, you know us, we've been doing this all our lives, or BlackRock, we've been doing this all our lives. We want to convert the Grayscale Trust, which we now, by the way, own, and we want to make that into an ETF, there's probably a bigger chance of that happening. And so I think what may actually happen here, now, obviously I have no news, this is all speculation, but I think who may actually save us is TradFi. I think Wall Street's going to save us. And if they do, that could be the best thing that happened. Because what would happen if that happened is, A, we've now got TradeFi coming all into Bitcoin, buying the biggest trash, trying to convert it into an ETF. B, that creates a massive, massive, massive short squeeze because there's a lot of people that are short. We know that right now. There's a lot of people that are short, specifically on a whole lot of tokens. Solana, there was a whole big short position on tokens. And so I think that this would be the most ironic outcome, but I think it's also a very probable outcome. And I think you got to keep your eyes on it. I think there is a good chance that Wall Street's bailing us out here, guys. Let's keep our eyes on it. Let's keep our eyes on it. This Barry Silbert capital raise is probably one of the most important capital raises in crypto. And again, as I said on my Twitter, and if you're not watching my Twitter, you're not getting the alpha. But it says here, if anyone can pull off the $1 billion raise in this market, it's Barry Silbert. He is a master. I imagine he'll raise enough to save a day, maybe at bad terms. The result, there will be a massive short squeeze. If I'm wrong, I'm going to delete a tweet. I'm going to eat humble pie. That's just the way it is. Listen, I can't go dark mode on Twitter because if I go dark mode on Twitter, people complain they can't read it on their phones. So can't do it. Can't do it. People asking here, Ryan, are you friendly with SBF? So I was friendly with SBF. He sponsored my CNBC show at the time. But then he went up too high, too fast, too soon, too young. And he became arrogant. And we lost touch. We had an argument. I wanted a good referral link with FTX. They gave me the big fuck you. Today, who's having the last laugh? I'm having the last laugh. I must tell you one thing. There is a thing called the banter curse. Okay, there's a thing called the banter curse. No jokes. I've been in this industry a hell of a long time. I made a lot of friends in this industry. There are some people that made a lot of money very quickly and decided that, you know, they were better than banter. They didn't want to come onto banter anymore. They didn't want to support their friend run. There were a lot of people that did that. Remember Do Kwan, who he said to me, read the room? Remember that? Remember that thing he said to me, read the room, bro? Remember that day we asked him to come on the show? He said, read the room? Yeah. What happened to Do Kwan? Destroyed. Another one, SBF, didn't want to come on the show, started to ghost us. What happened? Destroyed. Travis Kling. Remember Travis? Travis, I begged the guy to come on my show. We were mates. We used to speak to each other. Begged the guy to come on my show. Ghosting me. The banter curse. Destroyed. There are a whole lot of others. I mean, I could carry on. Novogratz used to come on my show all the time. The other day, I tried to get him on my show. What did he say to you? Ah, I'm overexposed. What happened to him? Pew! The banter curse. It's a real thing. It's a real thing. CZ has come on my show. He's the same humble person. He helped me. I helped him. He's the same humble person that he was. Flying. Came on banter. Flying. Hasib. Flying. Avishal. Flying. I can tell you who's going to go down next. I can tell you. You want to hear? Yeah. I don't want to say it because then people will say. But I'm telling you, there are one or two. I have a list of people that became too arrogant too quickly. They made too much money. They got too much fame too quickly. And as a result, they started to look down on being on YouTube and supporting their friend run. And you know what happened? You know what happened to those people? They get destroyed. The market destroys them. Got to be careful. If we phone you and say you need to come on banter, if we phone you and tell you you need to come on to banter, best you take our call because you don't want to be hit by the banter. You don't want to be hit by the banter curse. It's bad. Don't be like, remember another one? Suzu. Let me find you this message with Suzu. Let me find you the message where he said, let me find you the message with Suzu. Hold on a second. Suzu. Another one who was humbled. If we phone you and we say, please come on banter, how do you spell Suzu? I'm always confused. ZHU. So ZH. I'm actually going to show you the messages. I don't give a shit. Oh, man. I don't know how to get to those messages. Anyway, Suzu and Carl Davies, we asked them to come on the show. They didn't come on the show. You know what happened to them? You know. Gary Gensler also didn't want to come on the show. I reached out to him, didn't want to come on the show. I hear that he, by the end of January, Gary Gensler is going to be history. I hear this. I hear this from a good source, someone who's working on taking him down. The moral of the story here is one thing. If we phone you and say, please come on to Banter. You must accept the invitation, because if you don't, you will get hit by the curse that has hit so many others, okay? Mike Novogratz, hit by the curse. Suzu, hit by the curse. Kyle Davies, hit by the curse. Who else? Who else got hit? Doquan told me to read the room. I read the room. He's reading the newspaper. Who else was it? Who else was there? There was another one. Who was supposed to come on? All these people that believed that they got Sam Bankman-Fried. Sam Bankman-Fried. Bro, please come on the show. Yeah, let me show you. I'll show you this. Got to show you this because I'm so happy. But then, you know, I got my revenge. I'll show you my revenge. You'll laugh your head off, okay? So there's a group here called FTX. It's called FTX. I just want to see that I'm not just revealing numbers. Yeah, I'm not revealing numbers, okay? So you see, you have Fred. Okay, I can't show you this because I'm going to – okay, hold on a second. See, I'm going to hide Fred's name here. Okay, can you see? Oh, you can't see. Hey, you can't. Okay, so I'm going to read. There's a whole lot of messages here that say, please, we want to get Sam on the show. To the point where Fred says, hi, Natalie. We've pinged you a couple of times to lock in a date. Please, could you assist us? Crickets. I was so angry. I sent a message to Sam, a DM to Sam. I sent him a DM. I'm like, Sam, what's going on with you? What happens? Destroyed. Destroyed. Doquan. Let's read the Doquan messages. The day he told me to read the room and I realized that my friend Doquan became too arrogant. Hold on a second. I've got to find this for you guys. What did he say? He said, read the room. I've got so many messages with him. Okay. I can't show you the messages. Here we go. I can't show you messages. Not going to show. Long story short, I asked him to come on the thing. He says, bro, read the room. I'm too busy. I've got too much opportunity. How much opportunity have you got now? The moral of the story is very simple. When we phone you at Banter and we tell you that we want you on our show, you must come on the show. Don't be arrogant. Don't say, oh, I'm too good to be on Banter. I'm too good to be on a YouTube show. I only do CNBC. Because Novogratz, when I asked him to come on to Banter, the guy used to be on my CNBC show all the time. I asked Novogratz to come on to Banter. He said no. I saw him at a conference. This is my mate. I used to speak to him. I saw him at a conference. I go to the conference. I'm saying, like, Mike, listen, we're making the video for Token 2049. Can we interview? We've interviewed all the other speakers. Okay? What does he say? He says, no, I've got overexposure. Bro, the only overexposure you had is to Luna. And the only other overexposure you had is to FTX. That's the overexposure. Anyway, if we phone you and we say, please come on Banter, read the room and come on Banter. I'll see you guys again tomorrow. Until then, have fun, trade well, stay safe. That rant wasn't planned. I actually was venting because, you know, I feel like I'm like, guys, I bet you know who's going next. Pump. You know why? Because Pump got too big, too quickly, too arrogant. I invite him onto Banter, ghost me.